seal his shining eyes as soon as I've gone to bed with him, locked in love, and I will give you gifts, a magnificent throne, never tarnished, always glittering, solid gold. My own son, Hephaestus, the burly crippled smith, will forge it finely, and under it slide a stool, where you can prop your glistening feet and rest, stretching out at feasts. And the voice of sleep, the soft and soothing, drifted back. Hera, Hera, queen of the gods and daughter of mighty Cronos. Any other immortal god who lives forever, believe me, I would put to sleep in a wink. Even the rolling tides of the great ocean river, the fountainhead that brought them all to birth. But Zeus? Not I. I would not get too close to the son of Cronos, much less put him under. Not unless the father gave the command himself. A commission of yours taught me my lesson once. The day that Heracles, the insolent son of Zeus, sailed out from Troy, having raised her to the ground. And then I put the brain of thundering Zeus to sleep, pouring myself in a soft, soothing slumber around him. But you and your anger, you were bent on trouble, whipping a howling killer squall across the sea, bearing Heracles off to the crowded town of Cos, far from all his friends. But Zeus woke up, furious, flinging immortal gods about his house to hunt for me. I was the culprit, the worst of all, and out of the skies he would have sunk me in the sea, wiped me from sight, if the night had failed to save me. Old night that can overpower all gods and mortal men. I reached her in flight, and father called it quits, despite his towering anger. True, Zeus shrank from doing a thing to outrage rushing night. But now you are back, Hera. You ask me to do the impossible once again. Eyes widening, noble Hera coaxed him further.
So troubled, sleep, why torture yourself with that? You think that thundering Zeus, shielding the men of Troy, will rage as he raged for great Heracles, his own son? Come now, I will give you one of the younger Graces. Wed her at once, and she'll be called your wife.
On with it, sleep cried, thrilled by the offer. Swear to me by the incorruptible tides of Styx, one hand grasping the earth that feeds mankind, the other the bright sea, that all may be our witness, all gods under earth that gather round King Cronos. Swear you will give me one of the younger Graces. Pasithea, she's the one. All my days I've tossed and turned for her.
The white-armed goddess Hera complied at once. She swore as he urged and sounded out the names of all the gods in the Tartarian pit we call the Titans. As soon as she'd sworn and sealed her binding oath, away they launched from Imbrus's walls and Lemnos, swathed in a thick mist, and nimbly made their way until they reached Mount Ida with all her springs, the mother of wild beasts, and making Lektos headland, left the sea for the first time and swept over dry land, as the treetops swayed and shook beneath their feet. There sleep came to a halt, before the eyes of the father could detect him, and climbed up softly into a towering pine tree. The tallest trunk there was on the heights of Ida, it pierced the low-hung mist and shot up through the sky. There he nestled, hidden deep in the needling boughs, for all the world like the bird with a shrill cry, the mountain bird the immortals call Bronze Throat, and mortals call the Night Hawk. But not Hera. Quick on her feet, she scaled Gargaron Peak, the highest crest of Ida. And Zeus spotted her now, Zeus, who gathers the breasting clouds, and at one glance the lust came swirling over him, making his heart race fast as the first time. All unknown to their parents, they rolled in bed. They locked and surged in love. He rose before her now. He savoured her name.
Hera, where are you rushing? What wild desire brings you here from Olympus? Where are the team and car you always ride?
And filled with guile, the noble Hera answered,
I am off to the ends of the fruitful teeming earth to visit Ocean, fountainhead of the gods, and Mother Tethys, who nourished me in their halls and reared me well. I go to visit them and dissolve their endless feud. How long they have held back from each other now, from making love, since anger struck their hearts. My team stands at the foot of Ida with all her springs. They wait to bear me over the good dry land and sea. But now it is you. You I have come to visit, Zeus, speeding here from the heights of Mount Olympus, afraid you'll flare in anger against me later if I should go in secret toward the halls of the deep-flowing ocean.
Why hurry, Hera?
Zeus, who gathers the breasting clouds, replied,
That is a journey you can make tomorrow.
Now come, let's go to bed.
Let's lose ourselves in love.
Never has such a lust for goddess or mortal woman flooded my pounding heart and overwhelmed me so.
Not even then, when I made love to Ixion's wife, who bore me Pirithous, rival to all the gods in wisdom.
Not when I loved Acrisius's daughter Danae, marvellous ankles,
and Perseus sprang to life and excelled all men alive. Not when I stormed Europa, far-famed Phoenix's daughter, who bore me Minos and Rhadamanthus, grand as gods. Not even Semele, not even Alcmena, queen of Thebes, who bore me a son, that lion heart, that Heracles. And Semele bore Dionysus, ecstasy, joy to mankind. Not when I loved Demeter, queen of the lustrous braids. Not when I bedded Leto, ripe for glory. Not even you. That was nothing to how I hunger for you now. Irresistible longing lays me low.
Teeming with treachery, noble Hera led him on.
Dread Majesty, son of Cronos, what are you saying? You are eager for bed now, burning to make love here on Ida's heights for all the world to see? What if one of the deathless gods observes us, sleeping together, yes, and runs off to the rest and points us out to all? I have no desire to rise from a bed like that, and steal back home to your own high halls. Think of the shocking scandal there would be. But if you're on fire, overflowing with passion, there's always your own bedroom. Hephaestus built it, your own dear son, and the doors fit snug and tight. There we can go to bed at once, since love is now your pleasure.
And Zeus, who gathers the breasting clouds, assured her,
Hera, nothing to fear. No god or man will see us. I will wrap us round in a golden cloud so dense, not even the sun's rays, the sharpest eyes in the world, will pierce the mist and glimpse us making love.
With that, the son of Cronos caught his wife in his arms, and under them now the holy earth burst with fresh green grass, crocus and hyacinth, clover soaked with dew, so thick and soft it lifted their bodies off the hard-packed ground. Folded deep in that bed they lay, and round them wrapped a marvellous cloud of gold, and glistening showers of dew rained down around them both. And so, deep in peace, the father slept on Gargaron Peak, conquered by sleep and strong assaults of love, his wife locked in his arms.
Soothing sleep went rushing off to the ships at once, telling Poseidon how Hera had seduced great Zeus to lose himself in love. And now the Achaeans, led by Poseidon, pushed the Trojans back across the wall and sent them fleeing away in panic. At that moment, Zeus awoke on the heights of Ida and saw the Achaeans slaughtering, the Trojans scattering left and right. Furious, he forbade Hera and the other immortal gods to save the Argive force till Thetis's request had been fulfilled. Then he ordered Poseidon out of battle, the blue-haired god of the sea. Into the surf he dove, and the Achaean heroes missed him sorely. That very instant, storming Zeus dispatched Apollo, commanding him to turn the tide of battle. And now the Trojans sent the Argives scrambling back over the wall to their waiting beached ships. Meanwhile, Patroclus sat it out in his friend Eurypylus's shelter, applying soothing drugs to his dreadful wound. But soon as he heard the Trojans storm the wall, he rushed back to Achilles, hoping to spur the great fighter into combat. Now at the ships, like a pride of man-eating lions, the Trojan forces stormed the fleet. Hector toppled the stern of Protesilaus's warship, crying out, "Bring fire!" But great Ajax stood on the decks, tensing, braced to take them on. And any Trojan crashing against the beaked ships, torch ablaze in hand, Ajax, ready and waiting there, would stab each man with his long, rugged pike. 12 he impaled, point blank, struggling up the hulls.
So they fought to the death around that benched, beaked ship, as Patroclus reached Achilles, his great commander, and wept warm tears like a dark spring running down some desolate rock face, its shaded currents flowing. And the brilliant runner Achilles saw him coming, filled with pity, and spoke out winging words. "Why in tears, Patroclus? Like a girl, a baby running after her mother, begging to be picked up, and she tugs her skirts, holding her back as she tries to hurry off, all tears, falling up at her till she takes her in her arms. That's how you look, Patroclus, streaming live tears. But why? Some news for the Myrmidons, news for me. Some message from Phthia that you alone have heard. They tell me Menoetius, Actor's son, is still alive, and Peleus, Aeacus's son, lives on among his Myrmidons. If both our fathers had died, we'd have some cause for grief. Or weeping over the Argives, are you? Seeing them die against the hollow ships, repaid for their offences. Out with it now! Don't harbour it deep inside you. We must share it all." With a wrenching groan, you answered your friend, Patroclus, O my rider. "Achilles, son of Peleus, greatest of the Achaeans, spare me your anger, please. Such heavy blows have overwhelmed the troops. Our former champions, all laid up in the ships, all are hit by arrows or run through by spears. There's powerful Diomedes brought down by an archer, Odysseus wounded, and Agamemnon too, the famous spearman, and Eurypylus took an arrow shot in the thigh. Healers are working over them, using all their drugs, trying to bind the wounds. But you are intractable, Achilles. Pray God such anger never seizes me, such rage you nurse, cursed in your own courage. What good will a man, even one in the next generation, get from you unless you defend the Argives from disaster? You heart of iron, he was not your father, the horseman Peleus. Thetis was not your mother, never. The salt-grey, sunless ocean gave you birth, and the towering blank rocks. Your temper's so relentless. But still, if down deep some prophecy makes you balk, some doom your noble mother revealed to you from Zeus, well and good. At least send me into battle, quickly. Let the whole Myrmidon army follow my command. I might bring some light of victory to our Argives. And give me your own fine armour to buckle on my back, so the Trojans might take me for you, Achilles. Yes, hold off from attack, and Achaea's fighting sons get second wind, exhausted as they are. Breathing room in war is all too brief. We're fresh, unbroken,
The enemy's battle-weary. We could roll those broken Trojans back to Troy, clear of the ships and shelters. So he pleaded, lost in his own great innocence, condemned to beg for his own death and brutal doom. And moved now to his depths, the famous runner cried, "No, no, my Prince Patroclus, what are you saying? Prophecies? None that touch me, none I know of. No doom my noble mother revealed to me from Zeus. Just this terrible pain that wounds me to the quick. When one man attempts to plunder a man, his equal, to commandeer a prize, exulting so in his own power. That's the pain that wounds me. Suffering such humiliation. That girl, the sons of Achaea, picked her as my prize, and I'd sacked a walled city, won her with my spear, but right from my grasp he tears her. Mighty Agamemnon, that son of Atreus, treating me like some vagabond, some outcast stripped of all my rights. Enough. Let bygones be bygones now. Done is done. How on earth can a man rage on forever? Still, by God, I said I would not relax my anger, not till the cries and carnage reached my own ships. So, you strap my splendid armor on your back. You lead our battle-hungry myrmidons into action. If now, in fact, the black cloud of the Trojans blasts down on the ships with full gale force, our backs to the breaking surf, but clinging still to a cramped strip of land, the Argives lost. The whole city of Troy comes trampling down on us, daring, wild. Why? They cannot see the brow of my helmet flash before their eyes. Oh, they'd soon run for their lives, and choke the torrent beds of the field with all their corpses, if only the mighty Agamemnon met me with respect. Now, as it is, they're fighting round our camp. No spear rages now in the hand of Diomedes. Keen to save the Argives from disaster. I can't even hear the battle cry of Agamemnon break from his hated skull. But it's man-killing Hector calling his Trojans on, his war cries crashing round me, savage cries of his Trojans sweeping the whole plain, victors bringing the Argive armies to their knees. Even so, Patroclus, fight disaster off the ships. Fling yourself at the Trojans, full force, before they gut our hulls with leaping fire and tear away the beloved day of our return. But take this command to heart. Obey it to the end, so you can win great honour, great glory for me, in the eyes of all the Argive ranks. And they'll send her back, my lithe and lovely girl, and top it off with troves of glittering gifts. Once you have whipped the enemy from the fleet, you must come back, Patroclus. Even if Zeus, the thundering lord of Hera, let you seize your glory, you must not burn for war against these Trojans. Madmen, lusting for battle, not without me. You will only make my glory that much less. You must not, lost in the flush and fire of triumph, slaughtering Trojans outright, drive your troops to Troy. What if one of the gods, who never die, comes down from Olympus' heights to intervene in battle? The deadly archer loves his Trojans dearly. No, you must turn back, soon as you bring the light of victory to the ships. Let the rest of them cut themselves to pieces on the plain. Oh, would to God, Father Zeus, Athena, and Lord Apollo, not one of all these Trojans could flee his death, not one. No Argive either. But we could stride from the slaughter, so we could bring Troy's hallowed crown of towers toppling down around us, you and I alone. And so the comrades roused each other now. But Ajax could hold his post on the decks no longer. He was overwhelmed by the latest salvos, driven back by the will of Zeus and the fearless Trojan spearmen, hurling blows non-stop, a terrific din at his temples, his shining helmet clashing under repeated blows, relentless blows beating his forged cheek irons, and the joint of his left shoulder ached with labour, forever bracing his huge burnished shield rock steady. But they could not wrench it loose from around his body for all their pelting weapons. Again and again he fought for breath, gasping,
bathed in sweat, rivering down his body, his limbs soaked and sleek. Where could he find some breathing room in battle? Wherever he looked, pains heaped on pains. "Sing to me now, you muses, you who hold Olympus's vaulting halls, how fire was first pitched on Achaea's ships. Hector lunged at Ajax, toe to toe, hacked his ashwood pike with a heavy sword, and striking the socket just behind the point, he slashed the head clean off, leaving the shaft, the lopped stump dangling in Ajax's fist, useless, bronze head bounding away, clanging along the ground. And deep in his heart, brave Ajax knew and shuddered. Here was work of the gods, thundering Zeus on high, cutting him off from battle, dashing all his plans. Zeus, determined to grant the Trojans triumph now. So Ajax drew back, out of range, and then they flung their tireless fire at a fast, trim ship. She was up in flames at once, engulfed in quenchless fire. In a flash, the blaze went swirling round the stern, and Achilles slapped his thighs and urged Patroclus. "To arms! Patroclus, prince and master horseman! I can see the blaze go roaring up the ships. They must not destroy them. No escape route, then. Quick, strap on my gear. I'll rouse the troops." That was all, and Patroclus armed himself in Achilles' gleaming bronze. First he wrapped his legs with the well-made greaves, fastened behind the heels with silver ankle clasps. Next, he strapped the breastplate round his chest, blazoned with stars, swift Achilles' own. Then over his shoulder Patroclus slung the sword, the fine bronze blade with its silver-studded hilt, and then the shield strap and the sturdy, massive shield, and over his powerful head he set the well-forged helmet, the horsehair crest atop it, tossing, bristling terror. And he took two rugged spears that fit his grip. And Achilles' only weapon Patroclus did not take was the great man's spear, weighted, heavy, tough. No other Achaean fighter could heft that shaft. Only Achilles had the skill to wield it well. Pelian ash it was, a gift to his father Peleus, presented by Chiron once, hewn on Pelian's crest to be the death of heroes. Now the war team. Patroclus ordered Automedon to yoke them quickly. A man he honoured next to Achilles, breaker of men, always firmest in battle, nerved to wait the call. So at his command, Automedon yoked the horses, the rapid stallions, Roan Beauty and Dapple, the team that raced the gales, magnificent team, the Stormwind filly Lightfoot foaled for the West Wind, grazing the lush green grass along the ocean's tides. And into the traces he ran the purebred Bold Dancer. Achilles seized him once when he stormed Eetion's city, a mortal warhorse pacing immortal horses now. Prince Achilles, ranging his ranks of myrmidons, arrayed them along the shelters, all in armour. Hungry as wolves that rend and bolt raw flesh, hearts filled with battle frenzy that never dies, off on the cliffs, ripping apart some big antlered stag, they gorge on the kill, till all their jaws drip red with blood. Then down in a pack they lope to a pooling dark spring, their lean sharp tongues lapping the water's surface, belching bloody meat, but the fury never shaken, bills inside their chests, though their glutted bellies burst. So wild the Myrmidon captains, Myrmidon field commanders, swarming round Achilles' dauntless friend in arms. And there, in the midst, Achilles stood like the god of war, urging his charioteers and fighters, bracing shields. There were 50 fast black ships that bore his troops when Achilles, dear to Zeus, sailed east for Troy. 50 fighters aboard each, manning the oarlocks. 5 captains he named, entrusted with command, but he himself in his martial power ruled them all. The first battalion was led by Menestheus, bright in bronze, son of Spakius' river, swelled by the rains of Zeus, and born by the lovely Polydora, Peleus's daughter, when a girl and the god of a tireless river bedded down. But they called him the son of Borus, Peri-Eris' son,
who showered the girl with countless bridal gifts, his wedded bride in the sight of all the world. The next battalion was led by fighting Eudorus, born out of wedlock too. Phylas's daughter, Polymela, the gorgeous dancer, bore the man when irresistible Hermes, the giant killer, lusted for her once. She ravished the god's bright eyes, swaying among the dancers, singing goddess Artemis with arrow of gold and cry that eludes the hunt. And straightway up to her chamber Hermes climbed. The healer, in secret, lay in her arms in love. And the woman bore the god a radiant son, Eudorus, lightning on his feet and a crack man of war. As soon as the lady of labor's birthing pangs brought him to light, and he saw the blaze of day, Actor's majestic son, the powerful lord Echecles, led her home to his house with droves of bridal gifts, while old King Phylas reared the boy with kindness, tending, embracing the young Eudorus like a son. The third battalion was led by brave Pisander, Mimulus's son, who outfought them all with spears, all the Myrmidons, after Achilles' friend Patroclus. The fourth was led by the old horseman Phoenix. Alcimedon led the fifth, Laerces' gallant son. But soon as Achilles mustered all battalions, positioned in battle order, led by captains, he imposed this stern command on all his troops. Myrmidons, not one of you dare forget those threats you hurled from the fast-trimmed ships against the Trojans all the while I raged, and I was the one you blamed, down to the last fighter. Brutal son of Peleus, your mother nursed you on Gaul. Merciless, iron man, confining your own men to the ships against their will. So home we go in those ships and cut the seas again, since now such deadly anger strikes our captain. Denouncing me, my comrades, clustered together, always grumbling. Well, here's a tremendous work of battle, look, blazing before your eyes, and just the sort you longed for all those days. So, each man, tense with courage, fight the Trojans down. That was the cry that fired each soldier's heart. Hearing the king's command, the ranks pulled closer, tight as a mason packs a good stone wall. Blocks on granite blocks for a storied house that fights the ripping winds. Crammed so close, the crested helmets, the war shields bulging, jutting, buckler to buckler, helm to helm, man to man, massed tight. And the horsehair crests on glittering helmet horns brushed as they tossed their heads, the battalions bulked so dense. And out before them all, two men took battle stations, Patroclus and Automedon, seized with a single fury to fight in the comrades' vanguard, far in front. But Achilles strode back to his shelter now, and opened the lid of the princely inlaid sea-chest that glistening-footed Thetis stowed in his ship to carry, filled to the brim with war-shirts, windproof cloaks, and heavy fleecy rugs. And there it rested, his handsome, well-wrought cup. No other man would drink the shining wine from its glowing depths, nor would Achilles pour the wine to any other god, none but Father Zeus. Lifting it from the chest, he purified it with sulphur crystals first, then rinsed it out with water running clear, washed his hands, and filled it bright with wine. And then, taking a stand before his lodge, he prayed, pouring the wine to earth and scanning the high skies. And the god who loves the lightning never missed a word. King Zeus, Pelasian Zeus, lord of Dodona's holy shrine, dwelling far away, brooding over Dodona's bitter winters, your prophets dwelling round you, Zeus, the Selai sleeping along the ground with unwashed feet, if you honored me last time and heard my prayer, and rained destruction down on all Achaea's ranks, now, once more, I beg you, bring my prayer to pass. I myself hold out on shore with the beached ships here, but I send my comrade forth to war with troops of Myrmidons. Launch glory along with him, High Lord of Thunder, Zeus. Fill his heart with courage,
So even Hector learns if Patroclus has the skill to fight his wars alone, my friend in arms, or his hands can rage unvanquished only when I go wading in and face the grind of battle. But once he repels the roaring onslaught from the ships, let him come back to me and our fast fleet, unharmed, with all my armour round him, all our comrades fighting round my friend.
So Achilles prayed, and Zeus, in all his wisdom, heard those prayers. One prayer the father granted, the other he denied. Patroclus would drive the onslaught off the ships, that much Zeus granted, true, but denied him safe and sound return from battle. Once Achilles had poured the wine and prayed to Zeus, he returned to his shelter, stowed the cup in the chest, then took his stand outside, his spirit yearning still to watch Achaeans and Trojans struggle to the death. Myrmidons, battalions ranged in armour with great-hearted Patroclus, moving out now, the fury bursting inside them, suddenly charged the Trojans. They swarmed forth like wasps from a roadside nest, when boys have made it their sport to set them seething, day after day tormenting them round their wayside hive. Idiot boys! They make a menace for every man in sight. Any innocent traveller passing them on that road can stir them accidentally. Up in arms, in a flash, all in a swarm come pouring, each one raging down to fight for home and children. Such frenzy seized their hearts, Myrmidons pouring out of the ships, ceaseless shouts rising, and over them all Patroclus's war cries, rousing comrades. Myrmidons, brothers in arms of Peleus's son Achilles, fight like men, my friends, call up your battle fury. Now we must win high honour for Peleus's royal son, far the greatest fighter among the Argive fleet. And we, who fight beside him, the bravest troops, so even mighty Atrides can see how mad he was to disgrace Achilles, the best of the Achaeans. He closed with a shout, and fired each fighter's heart, and down in a mass they launched against the Trojans, ships around them echoing back their shattering cries. The Trojans, soon as they saw Menoetius's gallant son, himself, and his loyal driver, flared in brazen gear, all their courage quaked, their columns buckled, thinking swift Achilles had tossed to the winds his hard rage that held him back by the ships, and chosen friendship towards the Argives now. Each Trojan soldier, glancing left and right, how could he run from sudden plunging death? Patroclus was first to hurl his glinting spear right at the centre mass, the fighters milling round the stern of Protesilaus's blazing ship, and hit Pyrechmes, Firebrand, who led the Paeonians, the master riders from Amydon, from Axius's broad currents. Patroclus slashed his right shoulder, and down he went, his back slamming the dust with a jolting groan, as companions panicked round him. Brave Paeonians! Patroclus whipped the terror in all their hearts when he killed the chief who topped them all in battle. He rode them off the ships. He quenched the leaping fire, leaving Protesilaus's hulk half-burnt but upright still, and the Trojans scattered back with high, shrill cries. The Argives poured against them, back by the hollow hulls, the din of battle incessant. An Argive breakthrough. Bright as the moment Zeus, the Lord of Lightning, moves from a craggy mountain ridge a storm-cloud massing dense, and all the lookout peaks stand out and the jutting cliffs, and the steep ravines, and down from the high heavens bursts the boundless bright air, so now the Argives drove the ravening fire clear of the warships, winning a little breathing room. Not much, no real halt to the buck and rush of battle. For despite the surge of the Argives primed for war, the Trojans were still not wheeling round in headlong rout, away from the black hulls. Forced back from them, true, they braced for battle still, and made a stand. Deadlock. There man killed man in the pell-mell clash of battle, captains going at captains. Brave Patroclus first. Just as Areilicus swerved in sudden flight, he gored him in the hip with a slashing spear, and the bronze lance-head hammered through his flesh, the shaft splintering bone as he pitched face-first, pounding the ground.
and veteran Menelaus wounded Thoas, raking his chest where the shield-rim left it bare and loosed his limbs. And Amphlicus went for Meges, but Meges saw him coming and got in first by far, spearing him up the thigh where it joins the body, the spot where a man's muscle bunches thickest, the tough sinews shredded around the weapon's point as the dark swirled down his eyes. Nestor's sons on attack. Antilochus struck Antimnius hard with a whetted spear, the bronze ripping into his flank and clean through. He crashed at his feet. But Maris charged Antilochus, sweeping in with his lance, enraged for his brother, planted himself before his corpse, but Thrasymedes, quick as a god, beat him to it. He stabbed before Maris stabbed, no miss, right in the shoulder, the Argive spear point cracked through the bony socket, shearing away the tendons, wrenched the whole arm out, and down he thundered. Darkness blanked his eyes. So these two brothers, laid low by the two brothers, dropped to the world of night. Sarpedon's stalwart cohorts, spearmen sons of Amisodorus, he who bred the Chimera, the grim monster that sent so many men to death. There, quick Aeolian Ajax rushed Cleobulus, took him alive, stumbling blind in the rout, but took his life at once, snapped his strength with a sword that hewed his neckbone up to the hilt, so the whole blade ran hot with blood, and red death came flooding down his eyes and the strong force of fate. And now, in a breakneck charge, Peneleus closed with Lycon. They'd missed each other with spears, two wasted casts, so now both clashed with swords, Lycon flailing. Chopped the horn of Peneleus's horsehair-crested helmet, but round the socket the sword blade smashed to bits, just as Peneleus hacked his neck below the ear, and the blade sank clean through. Nothing held but a flap of skin. The head swung loose to the side as Lycon slumped down to the ground. There, at a dead run, Meriones ran down Acamas mounting behind his team, and gouged his right shoulder. He pitched from the car, and the mist whirled down his eyes. Idomeneus skewered Erymas, straight through the mouth, the merciless brazen spear-point raking through, up under the brain to split his glistening skull. Teeth shattered out, both eyes brimmed to the lids with a gush of blood, and both nostrils spurting, mouth gaping, blowing convulsive sprays of blood, and death's dark cloud closed down around his corpse. So in a rush each Argive captain killed his man. As ravenous wolves come swooping down on lambs or kids to snatch them away from right amidst their flock, all lost when a careless shepherd leaves them straggling down the hills, and quickly spotting a chance the wolf-pack picks them off, no heart for the fight, so the Achaeans mauled the Trojans. Shrieking flight the one thing on the Trojans' minds, they forgot their fighting fury. Great Ajax now, forever aiming at Hector, trying to strike his helmet flashing bronze, but Hector was far too seasoned, combat-tested, broad shoulders hunching under his bull's hide shield, his eyes peeled for a whistling shaft or thudding spear. Hector knew full well the tide of battle had turned, but still stood firm, defending die-hard comrades. Wild as a storm cloud moving off Olympus into heaven, out of a clear blue sky when Zeus brings cyclones on, so wild the rout, the cries that came from the ships, as back through the trench they ran, formations wrecked. And Hector? Hector's speeding horses swept him away, armored and all, leaving his men to face their fate. Trojans trapped but struggling on in the deep trench. Hundreds of plunging war teams dragging chariots down, snapping the yoke poles, ditched their master's cars, and Patroclus charged them, heart afire for the kill, shouting his Argives forward. "Slaughter, Trojans!" Cries of terror breaking, as Trojans choked all roads, their lines ripped to pieces, up from under the hooves a dust storm swirling into the clouds, as rearing horses broke into stride again and galloped back to Troy, leaving ships and shelters in their wake. Patroclus, whenever he saw the biggest masses dashing before him, there he steered, ploughing ahead with savage cries, and fighters tumbled out of their chariots head first, crushed under their axles,
war cars crashing over, yes, but straight across the trench went his own careering team at a superhuman bound. Magnificent racing stallions, gifts of the gods to Peleus, shining, immortal gifts, straining breakneck on as Patroclus's high courage urged him against Prince Hector, keen for the kill. But Hector's veering horses swept him clear. And all in an onrush, dark as autumn days, when the whole earth flattens black beneath a gale, when Zeus flings down his pelting, punishing reins, up in arms, furious, storming against those men who brawl in the courts and render crooked judgments, men who throw all rights to the wind with no regard for the vengeful eyes of the gods. So all their rivers crest into flood spate, ravines overflowing cut the hilltops off into lonely islands. The roaring flood tide rolling down to the storm-torn sea, headlong down from the foothills, washes away the good ploughed work of men. Rampaging so, the gasping Trojan war teams hurtled on. Patroclus, soon as the fighter cut their front battalions off, he swerved back to pin them against the warships, never letting the Trojans stream back up to Troy as they struggled madly on. But there, midfield between the ships, the river and beetling wall, Patroclus kept on sweeping in, hacking them down, making them pay the price for Argives slaughtered. There, Pronous, first of all. A glint of the spear, and Patroclus tore his chest left bare by the shield rim, loosed his knees, and the man went crashing down. And next he went for Thestor, the son of Enops, cowering, crouched in his fine, polished chariot, crazed with fear, and the reins flew from his grip. Patroclus, rising beside him, stabbed his right jawbone, ramming the spearhead square between his teeth so hard he hooked him by that spearhead over the chariot rail, hoisted, dragged the Trojan out as an angler perched on a jutting rock ledge drags some fish from the sea, some noble catch with line and glittering bronze hook. So, with a spear, Patroclus gaffed him off his car, his mouth gaping round the glittering point, and flipped him down, face first, dead as he fell, his life-breath blown away. And next he caught Erylaus closing, lunging in. He flung a rock, and it struck between his eyes, and the man's whole skull split in his heavy helmet. Down the Trojan slammed on the ground, head down, and courage-shattering death engulfed his corpse. Then, in a blur of kills, Amphoterus, Erymas, Epaltes, Tlepolemus, son of Damastor, and Echius, and Pyrrhus, Iphius, and Euippus, and Polymelus, the son of Argeus, he crowded corpse on the earth that rears us all. But now, Sarpedon, watching his comrades drop and die, war-shirts billowing free as Patroclus killed them, dressed his godlike Lycians down with a harsh shout. "Lycians, where's your pride? Why are you running? Now be fast to attack! I'll take him on myself. See who he is who routs us, wreaking havoc against us, cutting the legs from under squads of good brave men." With that, he leapt from his chariot fully armed and hit the ground. And Patroclus, straight across, as soon as he saw him, leapt from his car too. As a pair of crook-clawed, hook-beaked vultures swooped to fight, screaming above some jagged rock, so with their battle cries they rushed each other there. And Zeus, the son of Cronus, with Cronus's twisting ways, filling with pity now to see the two great fighters, said to Hera, his sister and his wife, "My cruel fate, my Sarpedon, the man I love the most, my own son, doomed to die at the hands of Menoetius's son Patroclus. My heart is torn in two as I try to weigh all this. Shall I pluck him up now, while he's still alive, and set him down in the rich green land of Lycia, far from the war of Troy and all its tears, or beat him down at Patroclus's hands at last?" But Queen Hera, her eyes wide, protested strongly.
"Dread Majesty, son of Cronus, what are you saying? A man? A mere mortal? His doom sealed long ago? You'll set him free from all the pains of death?
Do as you please, Zeus, but none of the deathless gods will ever praise you. And I tell you this, take it to heart, I urge you. If you send Sarpedon home, living still, beware. Then surely some other god will want to sweep his own son clear of the heavy fighting too. Look down. Many who battle run King Priam's mighty walls are sons of the deathless gods. You will inspire lethal anger in them all. No, dear as he is to you, and your heart grieves for him, leave Sarpedon there to die in the brutal onslaught, beaten down at the hands of Menoetius's son Patroclus. But once his soul and the life force have left him, send death to carry him home, send soothing sleep, all the way till they reach the broad land of Lycia. There his brothers and countrymen will bury the prince with full royal rites, with mounded tomb and pillar. These are the solemn honours owed the dead. So she pressed, and Zeus, the father of men and gods, complied at once. But he showered tears of blood that drenched the earth, showers in praise of him, his own dear son, the man Patroclus was just about to kill, on Troy's fertile soil, far from his fatherland. Now, as the two came closing in on each other, Patroclus suddenly picked off Thrasymelus, the famous driver, the aide who flanked Sarpedon. He speared him down the guts and loosed his limbs. But Sarpedon hurled next with a flashing lance and missed his man, but he hit the horse, Bold Dancer, stabbing his right shoulder, and down the stallion went, screaming his life out, shrieking down in the dust as his life breath winged away. And the paired horses reared apart, a raspy creak of the yoke, the reins flying, fouled as the trace horse thrashed the dust in death throes. But the fine spearman, Automedon, found a cure for that. Drawing his long, sharp sword from his sturdy thigh, he leapt with a stroke to cut the trace horse free. It worked. The team righted, pulled at the reins, and again both fighters closed with savage frenzy, dueling now to the death. Again Sarpedon missed. Over Patroclus's left shoulder his spearhead streaked. It never touched his body. Patroclus hurled next. The bronze launched from his hand. No miss. A mortal hit. He struck him right where the midriff packs the pounding heart. And down Sarpedon fell, as an oak, or white poplar falls, or towering pine that shipwrights up on a mountain hew down with whetted axes for sturdy ship timber. So he stretched in front of his team and chariot, sprawled and roaring, clawing the bloody dust. As the bull, a marauding lion, cuts from the herd, tawny and great-hearted among the shambling cattle, dies bellowing under the lion's killing jaws, so now Sarpedon, captain of Lycia's shieldsmen, died at Patroclus's hands, and died raging still, crying out his beloved comrade's name.
Glaucus! O dear friend, dear fighter, soldier's soldier! Now is the time to prove yourself a spearman, a daring man of war. Now, if you are brave, make grueling battle your one consuming passion. First, find Lycia's captains, range the ranks, spur them to fight and shield Sarpedon's body. Then, you, Glaucus, you fight for me with bronze. You'll hang your head in shame every day of your life, if the Argives strip my armor here at the anchored ships where I have gone down fighting. Hold on! Full force! Spur all our men to battle!
Death cut him short. The end closed in around him, swirling down his eyes, choking off his breath. Patroclus planted a heel against his chest, wrenched the spear from his wound, and the midriff came out with it. So he dragged out both the man's life-breath and the weapon's point together. Close by, the Myrmidons clung to the panting stallions, straining to bolt away, free of their master's chariot. But grief came over Glaucus, hearing his comrade's call. His heart was racing. What could he do to help him? Wounded himself, he gripped his right arm hard, aching where Teucer's arrow had hit him squarely, assaulting the Argive wall when Teucer saved his men. Glaucus cried a prayer to the distant deadly archer.
Hear me, Lord Apollo. Wherever you are now, in Lycia's rich green country, or here in Troy, wherever on earth, You can hear a man in pain. You have that power. And pain comes on me now. Look at this ugly wound. My whole arm rings with the stabbing pangs. The blood won't clot. My shoulder's a dead weight. I can't take up my spear, can't hold it steady. No wading into enemy ranks to fight it out. And our bravest man is dead, Sarpedon, Zeus's son. Did Zeus stand by him, not even his own son? I beg you, Apollo, heal this throbbing wound. Lull the pain, now. Lend me power in battle, so I can rally our Lycians, drive them into war and fight to save my comrade's corpse myself. So Glaucus prayed, and Apollo heard his prayer. He stopped the pains at once, stanched the dark blood in his throbbing wound, and filled his heart with courage. And Glaucus sensed it all, and the man glowed with joy that the mighty god had heard his prayer so quickly. First he hurried to spur his Lycian captains on, ranging his own ranks to fight around Sarpedon. Then he ran for the Trojan lines with long strides. He found Polydamas, Panthous's son, and Prince Agenor, and reaching Aeneas and Hector, helmed in bronze, shoulder to shoulder, let his challenge fly. "Hector, you've wiped your allies from your mind, and all for you, Hector. Far from their loved ones, far from native land, they bleed their lives away. But you won't lift a hand to fight beside them. There lies Sarpedon, lord of Lycia's shieldsmen, who defended his realm with just decrees and power. Ares has cut him down with Patroclus's brazen spear. Quick, my friends, stand by him. Cringe with shame at the thought they'll strip his gear and maim his corpse. These Myrmidons, seething for all the Argive troops we killed, we speared to death against their fast-trimmed ships." Hard grief came sweeping over the Trojans' heads. Unbearable, irrepressible. He was their city's bastion, always, even though he came from foreign parts, and a mass of allies marched at his command. But he excelled them all in battle, always. So now they went at the Argives, out for blood. And furious for Sarpedon, Hector swung them round. But the Argives surged to Patroclus's savage spirit. He spurred the Aeantes first, both ablaze for battle. "Ajax! Ajax! Come! Now thrill to fight as before! Brave among the brave, but now be braver still! Their captain's down, the first to storm our wall, the great Sarpedon! If only we could seize his body, mutilate him, shame him, tear his gear from his back, and any comrade of his who tries to shield his corpse, bring that enemy down with ruthless bronze." Urging so, but his men already burned to drive the Trojans off, and both armies now, pulling their lines tighter, Trojans and Lycians, Myrmidons and Achaeans, closed around the corpse to lunge in battle. Terrible war cries, stark clashing of armored men, and across the onslaught, Zeus swept murderous night, to make the pitched battle over his own dear son a brutal, blinding struggle. Here at the first assault the Trojans shouldered back the fiery-eyed Achaeans. A Myrmidon had been hit, and not their least man, dauntless Agacles' son, renowned Epigeus. He ruled Budion's fortress town in the old days, but then, having killed some high-born cousin, fled to Peleus and glistening Thetis, begged for his own life, and then they sent him off with Achilles, breaker of men, east to Stallion country, to fight and die in Troy. He had just grasped the corpse, when shining Hector smashed his head with a rock, and his whole skull split in his massive helmet. Down he slammed on Sarpedon's body, face first, and courage-shattering death engulfed his corpse. Grief for his dead companion seized Patroclus now. He tore through front-line fighters, swift as a hawk, diving to scatter crows and fear-struck starlings. Straight at the Lycians, Patroclus, oh my rider, straight at the pressing Trojan ranks you swooped, enraged at your comrade's death, and struck Sthenelaus, Ithemene's favourite son. A big rock to the neck snapped the tendons strung to the skull's base. So the front gave ground, and flashing Hector too, though only as far as a long, slim spear can fly when a man tests his hurling strength in the games, or in war,
when enemy fighters closed to crush his life. So far the Trojans gave, as the Argives drove them back. But Glaucus was first, Lord of Lycia's shieldsman now, the first to turn, and he killed the gallant Bathycles, Calchon's prized son who had made his home in Hellas, excelling the Myrmidons all in wealth and fortune. Now, just as the man was about to catch Glaucus, Glaucus suddenly spun and struck. He stabbed his chest, ripped him down with a crash. A heavy blow to the Argives, one of the brave ones down. A great joy to the Trojans, massing packs of them swarming round the corpse, but Achaean forces never slacked their drive. Their juggernaut fury bore them breakneck on. And there Meriones killed a Trojan captain, Laogonus, daring son of Onetor, priest of Zeus, Idaean Zeus, and his land revered him like a god. Meriones gouged him under the jaw and ear. His spirit flew from his limbs, and the hateful darkness gripped him. Just then Aeneas hurled his brazen spear at Meriones, hoping to hit the man as he charged behind his shield. But he eyed Aeneas straight on. He dodged the bronze, ducking down with a quick lunge, and behind his back the heavy spear shaft plunged and stuck in the earth, the butt end quivering into the air, till suddenly rugged Ares snuffed its fury out, dead still. The weapon shaking, planted fast in the ground, his whole arm's power poured in a wasted shot. Aeneas flared in anger, shouting out, "Meriones, great dancer as you are, my spear would have stopped your dancing days for good if only I had hit you." The hardy spearman Meriones shot back, "Aeneas, great man of war as you are, you'll find it hard to quench the fire of every man who fights you. You too are made of mortal stuff, I'd say. And I, if I'd lanced your guts with bronze, strong as you are, and cocksure of your hands, you'd give me glory now. You'd give your life to the famous horseman Death." But Patroclus, nerved for battle, dressed him down. "Meriones, brave as you are, why bluster on this way? Trust me, my friend, you'll never force the Trojans back from this corpse with a few stinging taunts. Earth will bury many a man before that. Come, the proof of battle is action. Proof of words, debate. No time for speeches now. It's time to fight." Breaking off, he led the way as Meriones followed, staunch as a god. And loud as the roar goes up, when men cut timber deep in the mountain glades and the pounding din of axes echoes miles away, so the pound and thud of blows came rising up from the broad earth, from the trampled paths of war, and the bronze shields and tough plied hides struck hard, as the swords and two-edged spearheads stabbed against them. Not even a hawk-eyed scout could still make out Sarpedon, the man's magnificent body covered over head to toe, buried under a mass of weapons, blood, and dust. But they still kept swarming round and round the corpse, like flies in a sheepfold, buzzing over the brimming pails in the first spring days when the buckets flood with milk. So veteran troops kept swarming round that corpse, never pausing. Nor did mighty Zeus for a moment turn his shining eyes from the clash of battle. He kept them